Hi, everybody. This is UX Untamed, and I'm Julia, and I'm super excited to have you here today. It's fall. Well, here in Vancouver, feels already like winter. It's super dark. It's cold, and I was telling Kevin, our guest, that I was going to have some Baileys and totally forgot about it. But again, I'm glad that all of you are here. Usually UX and TEM is all about how the designers relate. Ooh, look, what is going on today? Okay, let's see. Okay, how designers relate with their stakeholders and with different coworkers. But when I met Kevin, our guest for today, I really liked his past and how he was in different type of careers and professions, and he used all of that to be a product manager. So I thought, okay, let's talk about that. And then at the end, we will talk a little bit more his relationship as a product manager with designers. But instead of me telling you all of this, let's bring Kevin in. Hey, Kevin, nice to have you here.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, super excited. I know we've been waiting for this for so long. When I was booking everybody, I realized that it was so early in the year. And then he's like, oh, November we'll never get. And here we are. It's November. I cannot believe it. Yeah.
Oh, I felt the same way. It felt like it was so far off in the distance. And then now it's here.
Yes, I know. But, well, I'm so happy that it's finally here. Why don't we start telling people a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, of course. Kevin Behan, thank you so much for having me again. But I studied educational psychology in college. I really thought I was going to be like a teacher or studying learning science somewhere in a laboratory. Like, I'm just obsessed with education, the process of learning, instructional design, the whole thing. Like, I just love education in general. Started out as an assistant preschool teacher for a couple of years, and I got to work with some little kids, which was wonderful and beautiful. Then I transitioned into software development for finally landing in product for like the last 7 or 8 years as a director of product, an individual contributor, a founder. I tried to do something on my own too. That was an interesting thing. But yeah, now I'm at Coursera as a senior product manager, serving millions of learners globally, and I'm so grateful that I get the chance to do that.
And I feel like, of course, we will get to that point, but I love how everything kind of ties up where you are today, and it kind of brings everything like to the next level to make a great product manager. But before we go to that, why don't we tell people something fun or unique about you?
Okay. You know, I think as a product manager, you have to be like rigorous and data-driven and strategic. But I feel like the secret life I live is that like I'm first and foremost like a creative person. So I'm writing a science fiction book for fun. I write poetry regularly. I produce like hip hop and electronic beats. But like anything I can do to be creative and express myself, like I need it, you know, like that's so as much as I am, like I think people who'd see me at work as like this rigorous analytical kind of person, I'm like so creative and I need that outlet. So that's my second life.
Like that's pretty cool. Like, I mean, I feel like this is usually one of my favorite questions that I ask to everybody because it's always like so surprising and interesting. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Okay, so you mentioned a little bit that you went into psychology and then you ended up as a product manager. So why did you end up choosing going into education psychology? And how was the transition to then developer and then into product manager? I know this is a big question, so maybe we can start with the psychology first.
Yeah, I remember my mom got me this like little handbook of psychology with a bunch of different like marquee psychology experiments. And I just picked it up and I couldn't put it down. And there was something about like understanding how people think and feel and what drives them, you know, that was so fascinating to me. I feel like I'm kind of a sensitive person and I just feel other people's vibes. I don't know how to explain it other than that. And so this idea that there was something you could study to kind of learn and hone that was really interesting to me because I think at times in my past, I thought of it as almost like a weakness, but psychology, then later on other things in my career, like helped me realize it could be really like a true strength. So I don't know, that's kind of where it started. I also loved education. So I was like, that's so cool. There's education and psychology, and there's a whole science behind how we learn. So that was fascinating to me to start.
That's pretty cool. And I love the stories of like, your decisions taken from what you really were passionate about when you were a kid. I always think, oh my goodness, I will be a dancer, or I will be like a roller skater kind of idea. And it's like, I don't know why I never followed those dreams. I always think about that. It's like, when did I stop thinking I cannot do this? So I love when people say, you know, I love it when I was a kid and I was so passionate about it, I ended up going to school for it. But then you mentioned a little bit about teaching. Is your passion for teaching that brought you into being a developer? Mostly thinking that every time that I think it says developer is kind of you're in your bubble. And yeah, of course, you interact and you're in a team. But so away from the psychology and kind of those feelings and kind of going to, I don't know, deeper into the mind of people.
Yeah, you know, I just had a lot of people in my life growing up that were involved in education. My mom's been a special education teacher for a long time. Other people in my family have been involved with like teaching at universities and superintendents and things of that nature. So it was just like a part of my upbringing. And I feel like I was just lucky to fall into something that I really enjoyed and be around people that like were role models for me in that way. But I think the thing about teaching that I really like is that every student in the class is a little bit different, and finding a way to like really access what it is that makes them special and what they like, and then tailor your lesson around it. Or like, I was a tutor for a long time too. Like when you're trying to break something down for someone and they see it differently than you do, like that moment where you're able to like tap into how they're thinking and have like a shared kind of like connected knowing, and it clicks like for you as a teacher and a student. There's something that's really fascinating for me when it comes to that, that I just enjoy. So I think those were how those two things were tied for me. I just like being around kids too, is really fun. They're just curious and funny and will just say all kinds of crazy things that you can't expect to hear from adults. So that makes it just kind of fun too. Like I always feel like I need fun in my job as well.
I feel like just going a little bit into the topic of that connection when the teacher kind of clicks into what it works for you as a student. I think for me, when I think about those teachers in my life, I think this being the most impactful for me. And it gave me that confidence. It was like, oh, you know, I can do this. I thought that I couldn't understand it or couldn't get the concept. It's just the way that maybe other teachers were teaching it for me was not for me. And when a teacher really gets me and is like, okay, just do it this way, it's like you like I don't know, like a bomb. It's like, what? Okay, I get it, I can do it. So that's really powerful. And I love, yeah, I have many teachers that I love because of that.
I there are times I call it the like, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a time bomb, but that sounds too violent for what I mean. But like, you'll, a professor or a teacher will have told you something like 5 years ago, and then you're just like, oh my goodness, they were totally right. Like it just dawns on you. Like some teachers are so good at that, that they like plant these seeds with you. I don't know. So I totally know what you mean. It's
yeah,
a special moment.
Powerful. And what you mentioned about working with kids, I think working with kids, they have these amusement with simple things in life. I think that's what I like the best about kids. It's like, I don't know, whatever that is, maybe so simple and something that we do every day, for them is like a miracle. Yeah, there's like something new and something special. It's like, okay, yeah. Like watching the your hands could be this cool. At least I in one point of my life I wanted to be a teacher, and I volunteered for a while, and I was like, this is so energetic. Yeah, it's like kids really brighten your day. So that's cool. Okay, but then how did you ended up teaching kids and then going to be a developer?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's two distinct parts of my personality. Like one side is this like creative, emotional, kind of bubbly side of me. And then there's the other side of me that's much more like rigorous and analytical and wants to solve problems. And I need to sink my teeth into something that's just really deep and wicked in terms of like the problem. And so sometimes in teaching or tutoring, you come back to the same kind of subject or topic over and over again. And I feel like I just wanted to get into something where it was a little bit more dynamic and it changed maybe a little bit faster or it evolved a little bit more quickly. Obviously, like I had mentioned, every kid is its, I don't want to call them its own challenge, but like is this own person for you to figure out. And that was unique and special. But I wanted to try like, hey, I know there's this other side of me. I want to tap into it and see like what's there. So I think I feel like I swung the pendulum like completely to the other side. And I was like, let's see how this goes. So I have a tendency to like want to explore things. And so tried something completely opposite of what I was doing before.
Did you go to school? Did you learn by yourself? How did you ended up coding? Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. I ended up working as like a coding instructor at a place that taught kids to code. I got that opportunity because I was tutoring the person who ran the company, the CEO of that company. I was tutoring his kid who was like a child prodigy. He was like 8 years old and he was doing like deep like algebra and very like complicated mathematical things. Kid was crazy, smart, genius type kid, but he liked the way I worked with this kid. And he was like, you're really good at teaching math. Like you could probably code as well. Right. And so he gave me a shot as a coding instructor. And then he thought I was doing a good job there. There was an opportunity to be a software developer. He gave me that opportunity. I mean, this is a guy that believed in me like through and through, which I dearly appreciate, but he just gave me opportunities. And I think once he saw me picking it up, he was like, give it a shot. You could be a good software developer. And I said, why not? And I tried it out.
And again, I think that's so powerful going back to your dynamic as a teacher and having someone in the other side that is like, okay, ooh, look at this. Look at Kevin. Look at all the things that he can do. I'm kind of saying, okay, what about if you tried that? And I think that's a way to show that honestly what you give, that's what you get back. And sometimes it's unexpected and you got a new career out of it. So that's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really grateful for that opportunity. I mean, and it's like, sometimes you explore these things and it may not be exactly what you're looking for, but it shows you maybe some things that you don't like, maybe some things that you want to avoid in the future. And I feel like that's what software development did for me is it's like, I keep it as a hobby still. I've been, you know, developing software as a hobby for maybe like, I don't know, 6, 7 plus 8 years or something, just on and off. And it's kind of fun in that capacity. Like I can't do it full time because I just love working with people, collaborating, getting a diverse set of perspectives, which product management gives you. But sometimes with engineering, there's like a lot of deep, isolated kind of focus work. And there's value in that for sure. It didn't match like my personality type as much as I, you know, the things that I enjoyed a lot, like collaborating, communicating with people, kind of like what you get in the classroom. So I was looking for something in between. I was like, what's in between a preschool teacher and a software developer? It turns out it's product management.
And I think this is a great way to move into the next question is like, how did you end up thinking, okay, I want to be a product manager. How did you move into that next step?
I didn't really know. I honestly didn't even know what a product manager was. To this day, I don't think my mom knows what a product manager is, even though I've been doing it for a long time. We talk about it. But so it's a job that, I don't know, depending on the company, can be very different and sometimes can feel kind of fairly ambiguous. But it was just, there was an opportunity at the startup I was working at that was evolving rapidly. I got another opportunity and the CEO felt like it was time, like after we raised a round of funding or something, that we needed someone dedicated to product. And I was obsessed with education. I didn't necessarily know anything about product management, but I knew education really well. And I think the reason he gave me an opportunity is he understood that I knew like the ins and outs of teaching and instruction and what it looks like to build like an effective, like research evidence-driven or evidence-based kind of educational program. And like, as a product manager, it's so important for you to know the problem space. And so like, that's the piece I had. I didn't necessarily have all of the other like polish that comes with it, but it was a startup. And so you know, you kind of have to be scrappy and resourceful sometimes to find ways to fill positions. And he trusted me and he gave me an opportunity, and I knew the domain in and out, but I didn't necessarily know. I had to figure out like product management as I went along. I was reading books, I was doing all kinds of things, but just grateful to get an opportunity and to know the domain so well. That's super helpful, I think.
Yeah, no, and I think the next question that is about those skills that you transfer from psychology, being a teacher and a developer. I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, that helped you too. Of course, yeah, you knew really well about teaching and education. But what do you think that there were other skills that is like, these skills really helped me to be a product manager, even though I didn't know that the checklist. Yes, I didn't have the checklist on my hand.
That's a great question. I think as a teacher, I like to say that you work with a lot of diverse stakeholders because you have kids who have all different kinds of personality types, backgrounds, different learning proficiencies, and you're trying to help them reach a set of learning objectives. Just like as a product manager, you're trying to rally together a bunch of stakeholders to reach some kind of objective and key result or something, or some sort of strategic objective. So you have to kind of do a similar thing where you're like trying to make sure everyone's focused on the same class activity. Obviously, you're not working with kids or children, you're working with adults, but I don't know, I feel like that ability to empathize with your students or with your stakeholders and then help them like steer towards the same objective, I feel like there's a lot of transference there. Then as a software developer, like that's where you're getting into like deep kind of logical problem solving. And how do you break something down into smaller tasks? Like, how do you take something big? Because a computer is dumb. A computer doesn't know, like you make one little mistake, it doesn't know what to do. It can't be like, oh, you made a mistake, I'll just figure it out. No, the program fails and it doesn't work. So then you have to go back to your code, go through it like in a very linear kind of process driven way and discover what went wrong. But I feel like that really helped me, for one, empathize with engineers because I have experience in it. And so I feel like I understand in a deep, rich way what they're going through. And I feel like I've gotten a lot of engineering friends as a result of that, which is really cool. But I think that's one part, and just the rigor that you have to take and the methodicalness, that's probably not a word, that you take to solving a problem. I feel like I have that as well. Like there's like more of a patience I have with solving problems, which I did not have before software development. You know, I was just like all over the place, creative, too much energy. I don't even know, it was a little much, but that kind of ground me a little bit.
No, that's pretty cool. And I was taking notes because I really like how you keep using different experiences in the past and you just bring them in as so present into what you do as a product manager. And I will tackle this a little bit maybe later because I feel like that's such a great skill when looking in a new job and having that past experience and how to bring it in. So I really love that. I know that you told us a little bit how did you ended up landing this first job, and pretty much is like you were there and they were looking for someone, and then again the CEO saw the skills on you. But how do you like put your antennas and it's like, hey, look at me, or like the shininess side, like, look at me, I can do this. So what skills do you think that you were putting out or things that you were doing for this person to notice you and say, hey, why don't you take this role?
You know, sometimes I'm just such a curious person. I've had to learn over time to not get distracted by this, but I was just so curious about other things going on in the organization. And like, I remember, I don't know, the CEO seeing some of the things I did, like my writing skills. And he was like, oh, like, can you help us in the future? Like edit this piece of messaging or whatever, or just needing help. And just kind of like raising my hand and being like, yeah, I can totally do that. But just things would pop up and it would give me an opportunity to kind of like flex some of my other skills. And just whenever the opportunity came up, like I tried to be proactive And I think over time he saw that I had like a broader repertoire other than just software development. Obviously, I didn't study that in college. Like I came from a different background anyway. But I don't know, just raising my hand for opportunities, remaining curious about other things that are going on in the organization. And when something comes up, just being like bold or proactive enough to say like, hey, I might be able to help with this as well. The worst thing that can happen is they say, no, can you continue writing code? And it's like, yes, I absolutely can, of course. But when those situations came up, I felt like I tried to put myself in a position to like, just give it a shot, you know? And then the other thing is, it took some convincing. Like, I don't think he had another candidate in mind who has become like a really good friend of mine. He's brilliant, runs this amazing program. He probably should have got the job, for the record. He would have done a better job. But like, I just put forward like a passionate plea for why I care so much about the domain. And I don't know, I think he just came to trust me and wanted to give me an opportunity. Also, I was probably going to be cheaper than the person that he had in mind, and that played a role in it as well.
Makes totally sense. And I think this is more like a generic question now, is like, what do you think that you enjoy the most about being a product manager?
I think there's so many different things I enjoy, but there's two things in particular that are really salient. I think one is just anticipating the needs of people who are doing good things for the world. You know, like I've been in education or education technology my whole career, and it's because I get to serve teachers who are trying to teach people things, and I've been a teacher myself. And so like the ability to, these are great people, like they're trying to do something good, and the ability to just listen to them, like truly understand their needs, put them in my own words, and then to get to the point where I can start anticipating things, where like I've spoken to so many teachers that I can start putting ideas forward and they're like, hey, that's exactly what we wanted. But they didn't necessarily like express that explicitly to me, you know, like where I start to feel like I can think like them, you know, where I just feel almost like I'm a part of their community in a way, like I'm a guest in their house, if you will. I don't know. There's something about that. Once that starts to really pick up steam and I feel like I'm solving problems for them, and experiencing that moment where they just like, it just does something meaningful for them. I don't know, that's so important to me. So anticipating the needs of users to doing something good for the world. The other thing is more on like, I don't know, the problem solving side. Like when you get to work with people from so many different backgrounds, marketing, sales, designers, developers, everyone who has such different skill sets and perspectives and temperaments, and you can take all of those perspectives and like reshape a problem and find a way to like solve it in a way that's incredibly effective and creative and special. I don't know, that process can be tough, like for sure. But when you do it well, like I feel like it just gives you such a sense of pride. Especially when you find a way to include everybody, take in everyone's perspectives, listen to them properly. And it's something you can all look at together and go like, yeah, wow, we had so many different ideas, but like we came together to this one thing and it works, you know, as best as it possibly can. I don't know. I enjoy that too.
Yeah, no, that's super powerful. And I'm going to make a guess here. And I feel like this guess could even be back when you were into education and back when you were a developer and now that you're a product manager. Do you think that the job that you have now is your dream job? And that's what is related to the other professions, because I feel as we grow and as we learn things about ourselves and we try different things, it's like, yeah, at one point, teaching definitely was your dream job. And then you start discovering different things. And it's like, okay, let me try something else. And let me try something else. And then this keep evolving. But do you think this is your dream job at the moment?
I have this is something I need to work on, but sometimes I have a hard time like appreciating where I'm at right now. Like I always have a vision for where I want to go next, and I'm always just like not totally satisfied, you know? And I don't know, maybe it comes with being an artist. Like when you're making a painting or something, there's that kind of personality trait that comes with artists where you're just like never truly satisfied. But I love product management. I think it's a great fit for me. That's why I've been in it for like the last 7 or 8 years. I feel like I always have these like lofty ambitions of like maybe one day I'll start my own school or do something crazy like that. I don't know. So I'm always keeping that in the back of my mind, is that like maybe one day I'll want to do something entrepreneurial and I'll go back to like trying to found something again. But the discipline itself, like product management, everything that comes with it, the responsibilities that are asked of you, I love it. I think it's great.
Okay. Well, let's, I don't know, let's don't call it the dream job. So if we, because I feel like, I don't know, I do feel the same. And I think that's why I do have different passion projects, because I feel like, okay, my full-time job is not having everything that I want. Yes.
Yeah.
So let's have a podcast and let's meet people and let's empower people through people's stories. Say, okay, maybe this is not enough for me to empower people. So I have Cherry on Tech, that is a space where we have women and non-binary people developing skills. But I feel like I do feel the same. I will never say that I have a dream job, because I don't know even what does that mean. So maybe let's say how people can find a job that they love or a career that they love, and they can pursue it at least for 5, 7 years, 10 years. How do we find that?
Yeah, like how can you find peace with, you know, your journey, your career journey for some period of time, right?
Yeah.
I think I kind of want to try to divide this into two buckets, because I feel like they require different things for you to figure this out. Like one is the domain and the other is the discipline. Like by domain, I mean like you want to get involved in climate change, or you want to get in, or like climate stuff, you want to get involved in social impact, you want to get involved in the finance industry or healthcare or whatever it is. But like there may be a particular domain that you're just passionate about, or for whatever reason, it just resonates with you. Like kind of like education does for me, because I think you could be a designer in many different domains or industries. And so that's where like more of the discipline piece comes in, where it's like there are specific jobs and tasks you're gonna have to do day in, day out, like basically no matter what company you're in. They may be different a little bit depending on where you go and the size of the company and all kinds of things, but like basically the set of jobs and tasks that you'll have to do are gonna remain the same. And I think that requires a different type of like process and approach. You know, like if you're someone who's not very talkative, you probably wouldn't want to work in a call center, you know. Or if you're someone who's very social, you probably wouldn't want to be like a deep sea diver or something. I don't know. But I think that's where more of like being introspective and paying attention to your traits is really important for finding the right discipline. There's definitely tools out there. I don't think any of them are perfect, but they at least can give you a map, like Gallup Strength Finder, a little survey you can fill out that will spit out like your top traits. Is it going to be perfect? Absolutely not. It's a flawed instrument, but it at least gives you ways of thinking about different behaviors that you can put a label to. So you can be like, oh, I may be competitive. You know why? Here's some of the strengths of being competitive. These are the things that motivate me. Here's are some of the weaknesses. You may try to compete with your peers or something in a working place, and that's not good. I don't know, but it like paints that picture for you. And like I said, it's not going to be fully accurate. A lot of these things are going to be wrong. But having labels to introspect on and like put a name to something really abstract can be really helpful, especially when you're trying to figure out like, hey, what makes me special? What are the things that I struggle with? And how do I find a discipline where I can show up with as many of those strengths as possible? But finding a language somehow, that's just one example. There's many other tools, and you may just naturally be introspective and you come up with your own language. I don't know. This is something that like I pride myself in. I love like just reflecting on who I am and the things that I do and don't do well, and so on and so forth. But yeah, finding what makes you special and then aligning that with the skills and the discipline can be really helpful.
Nice. Perfect. Yeah. And if I, yes, I think for me, that was one of the biggest aha moments, or how did you call it? Bumps, light bumps, of my last 3 years. Kind of take everything that I'm really passionate about and that I really like and put it into do something. Yes, I feel like when I finished high school and I was trying to find the career, the profession, I never thought about that. It's like, what is going to be successful and what is going to be respectful or whatever. Yes. And I really didn't take in consideration my passions, again, being a dancer. I don't know. And then I was like, I'm done with this. Yes, I'm done with trying to just pay the bills, and I'm trying to be just like, make it to work and see if I survive another day. And he's like, what about if I just change it and I start really taking in consideration what I like? And I think that point of where you are good at is such a hard thing, because sometimes you've been good at this forever and you just think it's just a natural thing that comes to you and is, I don't know, that is not good. It's just, you are like this. Because I find a lot of people, when I talk to them, it's like, you are so good, I don't know, at writing or talking, whatever. I mean, oh, I just been doing it. It's like, but that's what you're good at. So I think for people to discover and put that outside and just tell it aloud is a little bit hard. How do you do those reflections? So do you have like a steps to, like, let's sit down and, I don't know, write things. I don't know if you have like a...
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I can be very analytical, and some of the things I'm like, I probably shouldn't share this because it's probably too much, but I guess if I were to try to keep it simple, like, I think the minimum you can do, let's say you're already in a job, because there's different stages. Maybe you're just trying to discover where to go next, or maybe you're already in a job, or you're in a discipline and you just want to like get to the next level, like you want to mobilize. But let's say you're in a job, you're not sure if you like it. I think just having a regular thing put on your calendar in advance where 45 minutes, uninterrupted time, you just break down your tasks, and all you do is you put them into, I like, I don't like, you know? You can get much more sophisticated than that, but as long as you start with that, which I feel like is not super intimidating to commit to, you can at least just get a sense of like, I really don't like doing documentation for this thing. And it's not like you're going to find that 100% of what you do, you need to be satisfied with. Like, some things are good for your, I sometimes call them eating your vegetables, but I feel like that's not appropriate anymore because I actually love eating vegetables now. But it's like some percentage of your job you're not going to like, and that's okay. You just want to make sure that that's not like the majority of your job, because at that point you get overstimulated and overwhelmed and you don't have energy to show up for other areas in your life. And it's tough. It can spiral, but just regularly seeing and just bringing awareness to it, you know, it's almost like when you're first becoming a little bit more like financially responsible and you're keeping track of what you spend your money on, and you're like, oh my goodness, I've had a subscription to something for 2 years that I've never used, you know. But just starting there to see like where your time goes and if you like it or don't like it, and you can evolve from there, but that can at least give you an idea of some of the things that maybe you should spend more time on because you like them or you really enjoy them. Are there roles out there where that can be like brought to the fore? Like you mentioned with, you know, communicating and writing and your general communication skills, you're doing something right now where you really get to flex that, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I feel like sometimes that's so scary because it's like, oh my goodness, I hate all of this. But I think at least
it's like, yeah.
Let's find something else. And yeah. I don't know, but it's good to sit down with you and go through those thoughts. One of the things that when I talk to a lot of new designers that they haven't worked in a real job or in a full team is like, what do we do with product managers? Yes, because sometimes I feel like we do, I don't say the same kind of job, but we have so many elements that we take from and we utilize them for our own job, me as a designer and you as a product manager. So how is the relationship between product managers and designers, and how do we work better together?
How do we work better together? I think there's so many different directions I can take this in. I'll try to take it piece by piece, but there's different levels you can work together at. Like, product manager is supposed to be, obviously does things like prioritization and roadmaps. So like what order you're going to work on certain projects and why they're important. And you work on things like what's the vision for your product area and what's your product strategy? These like higher level types of things that determine what projects you're going to prioritize or work on. They like inform what you're going to work on, or they help inspire the team or bring the team together. And I feel like designers absolutely can play a role, not just in like creating the UI and the experience and helping with the research and user testing, but can play like a fundamental role in the vision casting and the product strategy too. Like designers are really good at taking something abstract and concretizing it, like bringing it to life. And I feel like a vision isn't compelling until you can see it. Like when you're just talking about it or showing market data or boring slides with numbers on it, like those are important. Those are important to understand the opportunity size, but they don't bring it to life. And I feel like that's an area where designers should be a partner with you. You know, that might be intimidating if you're new to design, but if you're more experienced, like that's an area where I feel like you can really kind of bring your creativity to the table and contribute to the team and the development of the product in like a higher level kind of way. You know, using skills like that, you're obviously going to have it in a much stronger way than a product manager who probably hardly knows how to operate in Figma or something. So I don't know. I think at the vision casting and product strategy level, you can be a great partner, especially if you're on the more experienced. If that's intimidating because you're new to it, totally understand, you know, and you can set those expectations with product and the rest of the team. But I think the other component is like keeping in mind like speed and space. I feel like there's this like intricate dance between product and design, and it's important where you want to be able to give designers enough space that they can reframe a problem or a design or go through many iterations and get to something that's worth testing or putting in front of users. But you have to give them space to do that because the creative process can take time and sometimes it's unpredictable. I know this as someone who like makes music and writes poems, and like the other side of that though is the speed piece. Like sometimes you have to, like what I like to say is just like finish the movie, you know? Sometimes it's like you just got to get your 2-hour movie out into the theaters. You probably have 5, 6 hours of footage. You have to cut it down and just put it out there. And I think if you're not careful, if you hold on to it too long, you're going to be biased by people internally and your discussions internally when what's essential is getting the feedback from actual users. Because you may have all these assumptions, and if you don't test them, you won't know if it's actually effective or if it works. And allowing users, like pulling them into your process early, they can be grateful for, you know, and they can give you feedback and they can shape what you end up building. But if you put something in front of them too early, you know, I don't know, it's like serving raw chicken. It's gonna be sick. It's gonna sicken them. It's gonna erode their trust in you. It's gonna waste their time. So speed and space are important. Give, you know, a designer enough space that they can be creative and iterate and run with something and feel comfortable with what they're putting in front of people, but like not too much space that you now haven't given your users an opportunity to like provide feedback and shape what you ultimately build.
I think a lot of people mention, and I think, of course, to have a good relationship with everybody in the team is fundamental. I mean, it would be amazing. But I want to center a little bit into what is important, the relationship between the product manager and designers. Like, why to cultivate it and make it good?
I mean, like, for one, a lot of organizations want to be customer centric. And I feel like a lot of designers just generally are very empathetic. Like, that's a trait that I feel like is very much like someone's a designer, it's probably a surefire thing that they're not necessarily guaranteed, but that they're very empathetic. So if you want to be customer centric and deliver on the needs of the customers, you better make sure that they're included in how you develop the product and how you do your research and testing, because they're just going to have this natural capability to tap into what users need and want. And some of the things that are unsaid, that maybe in the body language or the tone of how they express themselves, all kinds of nuanced things, but that they can pick up on and can help you scope the project properly or prioritize the right problems to solve. But I don't know, tapping into that empathy, I think, is just key. Like if you want to claim to be a customer-centric business in any way, shape, or form, you need empathetic people, and it's a pretty almost guaranteed thing that your designers are going to be very empathetic.
Yes, I think so. I am empathetic a little bit at least. Okay, but what about the opposite? What about if me as a designer, I want to build a better relationship with the product manager? Like, what do you think that I can do to improve our dynamics?
Yeah, I think it goes, you know, takes two to tango. And I think that it's really important to have insight into how things are prioritized. Because if you don't know how things are prioritized, you can't influence the prioritization. And you bring a unique, valuable perspective to the team for reasons that I already did mention. But if you don't know how things are prioritized, you may feel intimidated by asking that things be reprioritized or put in a different order, or you just may not have the understanding of how you influence that process. So it's really important for product managers to be clear and transparent with how they prioritize things so people know how to be involved. Because otherwise it can just feel intimidating or opaque and you just don't know how to participate. And in the same token, it's important for the designers to understand how that works too, so that they can kind of contribute their perspective and influence the priorities, because, you know, you may be able to deliver so much more value to the users if their perspective is properly represented how you prioritize things.
Nice. Yeah, cool. And again, I want to go back a little bit of those first designers coming into their first job and it's like, hey, please meet Kevin, our product manager. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, and I know that, again, a lot of designers, when see people with so many experience, they have worked in so many different places, and in a way, the project manager is in a lead position, and it's like, what do I do? What do I do as my first day as a designer in the company? And how do we... what do I expect? What should I ask you between me as a designer, as a product manager to improve, again, for us to understand what is happening? Because again, the first time designer will say, hey, what are the priorities in the pro? Of course not. Yes, I mean, they are trying just to survive that first month. So what should I expect?
What should you expect? You know, I think one area, especially if you're first starting, where you as a designer and product like need to be on the same page, is just understanding the users and their needs and what users, and depending on the business, like which different segments you're focusing your energy and attention on, because you're gonna get so many requests. And sometimes it can feel like you're going to be pulled in many different directions, and that can feel chaotic and it can burn you out. And so just making sure that you and the product manager are super aligned on like who your users are, what their needs are, the sources of like feedback from users, that can be super motivating, especially when you're trying to get concrete examples of what their problems look like. Find the repository or data source or wherever it is that you are keeping track of like quotes and feedback from your users, and kind of go over it together to gain a shared understanding of what those problems are, especially when you're first starting out. Because I mean, I don't think there's any better source than hearing it from like directly from the mouth of the user. So however you can get that as much as possible, especially when you're first starting, I feel like that'll help with the prioritization process, because you'll see directly from the user. And if you're customer centric, hopefully you are in some way, then you'll see kind of what their problems are directly, but then you can kind of gain a shared understanding of like how each of you should be thinking about the user's problems, if that makes sense.
Yes, I'm going to throw a question that I don't have on our list, so be prepared. Okay, so I was thinking, like, we were talking a lot of like green flags. Yeah, it's like all this amazing and beautiful relationship with product managers and designers, but could you mention like maybe one or two red flags? Because I feel like sometimes not everybody has the experience of like working with an amazing team. And I have met many designers that they go first time to a first UX job in a tech company. And they have such a bad time. And they think that everything else is like that. And they It's like, oh no, definitely not. So what will be kind of one, two red flags for people to know?
For product managers, like you're working with a product manager, there's a red flag. Okay. Deal chasing can definitely be a red flag. What I mean by that is, like, as opposed to finding a way to serve, to do the most good for the most users, there are a handful of accounts or people with a lot of influence that are shaping all the decisions you make. And so you end up making something that doesn't necessarily feel like it integrates with the product, like, holistically. It feels like it was just slapped on there, you know? And it's like, why did we do that? Like, how, at a higher level, how does this help us reach our vision? You know, you lose a sense of, like, purpose when you're doing a lot of that. And on top of that, it can lead to a lot of context switching and urgency. And so you can end up just, like, being put in this, like, sprint mode where you're going from deal to deal, just trying to, like, solve singular problems as opposed to zooming out and doing something more strategic. So there are, obviously there's times, depends on the business. There are certain businesses where they just go after a handful of extremely large enterprise accounts. And then that's kind of what you have to do. But I would say for the majority of product teams, you want to be really careful about that because you're kind of just maximizing for the short term. And you can end up building this Frankenstein product that is this designer you're not proud of because you look at it and it just doesn't make sense and it's not cohesive, it's ugly. And it's because you just solved all of these tiny little unrelated problems as opposed to thinking more long term and more strategically.
And I think that's, I feel like these kind of things, people should really hear them. So when they see them, they say, okay, this is a red flag. And maybe like you were saying, maybe in some companies, that's what they do. But I think to have those clear expectations will be nice. So you are not going in and what is going on? Everything is like this. Thank you for that. Something that a lot of people ask sometimes is maybe from going from developer or maybe as a designer or maybe I think a lot of project management want to go into product management. And I know that you didn't go to school. It was kind of my like learning as you go and learning on the side, reading and doing different things. For sure, I think like being a developer helped a lot. In kind of that tech side to help with the expectations, but how to become a product manager and if you have any tips.
I have some thoughts about specifically what could make the transition nice as a designer going into product management. I think there's two things, like you use your gifts and you raise the floor on the things that may not come naturally to you. When I'm talking about using your gifts, I mentioned this before, but like your ability to bring a vision to life as a product manager, you have to work on a vision statement and you have to rally the team behind that. And as a designer, you're going to be naturally positioned to do that better than most product managers, especially if they don't have a design background. So finding a way to lean into that, to like paint a picture of what a 3 to 5 year vision could look like and how to use your design background to like bring that to life with visuals. Like, I feel like that's something that could be a real edge for a design. I've seen designers that transition into product management, sometimes have to do presentations to their team. And then there's just this polished, beautiful vision. And I'm like, wow, I could never do that. You know, I'm so jealous, but like, that's something where I'm like, you have an advantage. Like we were talking about before, it's a transferable skill. And it's just something that you could lean into as an edge. And then I think the other thing is, obviously designers are naturally creative for the most part. I'm making some assumptions here, but I feel like some of these are safe. But when you're creating a problem statement for a new project, it's kind of like the boundaries or the guidelines for like, hey, if we go beyond this, we've gone a little too far, you know, like be careful. The problem statement is what does that. But to get that right, you need to like reframe the problem like thousands of different ways, you know, that's maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but a lot. And I feel like that's something that what makes designers great is they're so great at reframing things, you know, and that'll transfer well to writing a problem statement and keeping the team focused on like a real crisp, clear space, you know, being able to zoom in and out a lot. The other thing where I'm like, And this really depends person to person, honestly. Like, sometimes I feel like you don't always get to metricize things as much in design. That's not necessarily always the case, not the case necessarily with user experience where you're doing a lot of research, like, but sometimes the product manager owns the success metrics. And obviously they'll collaborate with design and other people to get input, but you don't necessarily get to always drive that as much, it feels like. And so finding a way to just metricize everything and anything that you can to get more experience with putting numbers and success metrics to a project. Because unfortunately, like, you may not necessarily always get the opportunity to do that as a designer. Or I've been in situations where that's been the case, where they feel like they don't necessarily get those opportunities. So that might be an area where you need a little bit more practice, or you just haven't got as much exposure. So I feel like that's an area where if you could put more attention and practice to it, amazing, because you're gonna have to do a lot of that as a product manager too.
And yeah, I think that's definitely what people struggle the most when doing that transition. It's like, oh, they never let me touch that, or I'm not in that group to get that information. And I think this going back from your first like product manager role is like you start asking questions, you start putting your hand up, and it's like, hey, can I join this? Can I do that? So if we can finish up when like the top tip that anyone could do in their present job to kind of start moving forward, maybe not even being a product manager, but bring the product manager brain into what they do in the daily job.
That is a really good question.
Sorry, I was just on a list, add all these new questions. I feel like what happens sometimes is, and I think maybe this is a little bit linked to that dream job. Yes, we think it's like, maybe my dream is being a product manager, but maybe there are little things that I can try now as a designer, now as a developer, now as a QA, now as like whatever you are in your present moment, and I start putting your product manager hat. What can I do?
Something when I was first, I was like product managing my life at some point, is I had this game night with my friends where we would gather and we would drink and we'd play board games and other stuff. And it was really fun. And I just interviewed all of my friends. I was like, hey, can I like just call you really quick and ask you like what you're satisfied with and what you're not satisfied with? And we talked about it. So many weird things emerged where it was like, I don't think it's fair that I always have to bring the chips or something. And you're like, oh, that's so weird. I never would have known that at all. I wouldn't have thought it. Nobody else put that down. But to one particular person, it's like, that was a big deal. You know, it's like, I don't like to, when we go late, I get tired. And then I feel like I'm like forcing myself to stay up and I feel uncomfortable. But all of these weird, like when you start asking like simple questions like that, just about how satisfied or unsatisfied people are with like things that you engage with daily that you may not even realize. Because I always go to these events and I always like, man, we just had a lot of fun. Meanwhile, like everybody has like these little pain points and things that you may not ask about, but you start to like be curious and dig into it a little bit. It's kind of funny how it like starts to unravel, you know, like an onion. You're like peeling the layers back, even with everyday things that you feel like are totally cool or fine. Not necessarily always the case.
Well, and like you were saying, it's such a simple thing to do. Like, how are you doing how are you doing today could be like a question. Is it good? But I think to try to, again, and we are going back to the beginning when you were saying being a teacher and how to relate with a student in a specific way and trying to find those little tricks for each person that you talk, because they will like something different of you. For me, I feel like when I think about a product manager, it's kind of that love and fun glue that keeps you together. I don't know if that's like a thing, but I feel like the person that needs to kind of keep us in check, like, how you doing? Kind of opening the space for how I can serve you better. I don't know if this is like a thing, but for me, I think that in our case, we call them journey owners, is such a big and a strong part of the team.
Oh, yeah. You know what? To add on that just gave me an idea, is like active listening, like just practicing your ability. to hear what somebody says, put it in your own words, and confirm that you said what you think they said. You know, like, so much of that makes you a better product manager because you're interviewing people about their needs. And if you hear something and you go write it down and you try to act on it and you're wrong, like, that's a problem. So even if you're in your everyday life, you can just try more. I think sometimes so many people in my life, I can get kind of annoyed with it, but I like love to always like rephrase it and put it in my own words. Like, I can't help it. It's like almost like a quirky thing of the way that I behave, but I don't know. I feel like that's just an essential skill. Finding a way to hear what somebody says, listen actively, don't have a conversation going on in your head. Just have space in your mind to hear what they're saying. Put it in your own words, confirm that you got what they said.
Yeah, I love that. And yes. And I know I said, last one. Cause I told you at the beginning that I was going to ask you this because I really like how you keep bringing your experience from different situation and from your past and really make it like actionable today, current. And I feel like that's what a lot of people, I do struggle tons of that. To say, for me, at one point, I did retail management and how those skills or situations helped me a lot to where I'm doing today. I felt like it was until I wasn't the job, it's like, oh my goodness, this is what I used to do at the store all the time. But I couldn't do that magic of the transferable, how to express those in words. I mean, you were doing it so good. So how do we do that? How do we bring that experience and make it understandable for people and they can see those skills are so useful to what I'm going to do now? I know this is not even, I don't know if it's even on the topic, but I thought that you were doing it so good.
Oh my goodness. I'm going back and forth on different ways to try to explain this because this process of making connections between things, you know, like that's what's essential. Like in learning science, we call this elaborative interrogation. Like you're trying to find a way to elaborate on something to show how design is connected to retail management, right? And like you're trying to find the overlap and the commonalities. And like, I wish that, you know, sometimes when there's certain things that are just so natural for you, it's like hard to explain. This is one of those things where I'm like, this is just the way that my mind works and I don't know what to tell you. And I wish that I could, but I don't know. I don't have a good, like, typically I have some kind of framework or something and I'm like, this is just something that, that just happens to my mind like instantly where I'm like, ooh, connection to this, this and that. And I'm like, whoa, now I'm distracted. So, I don't have a good answer for you.
But that's okay. I mean, and I think that it goes back to when you were young. So it's something again that you've been practicing so long that again is one of those things like, oh, I've been doing this forever. So I feel like for us that we don't have that is like how to just keep practicing and really put it in place all the time.
I got something for you. I'm sorry to interrupt, if it's okay. It came to me. So something I try to do pretty actively is what I call productive curiosity. Why productive curiosity? Because my curiosity was untamed. Shout out to the podcast. But it was too much. It was all over the place. My mind would constantly be going to different things. But productive curiosity in my mind is like, 25% of the time, even in my work or my personal life, I want to be finding things that are like unrelated to what I'm working on, but could be related. So I can practice like expansive thinking, you know, like for example, when I was working on this like data analytics project about helping like say learners understand their progress, I was thinking like, hey, what industry does illustrates progress really well? And I'm like, sports does. Why does sports? Because it's very well structured. The game is played the same way every single time. And so you can just metricize the living hell out of it. And I'm like, well, perfect. is that related to education at all, sports? I don't know. Not really. It's like kind of just unrelated. But I try to let my mind go to those places sometimes where it's like unrelated, but maybe I can find a connection or a piece of inspiration and like try to figure out how they're tied together. Because then you can learn something from it. You know, like when you're taking inspiration from sources that are way too close to the things that you're touching all the time, you can kind of like, I don't know, get diminishing returns, but you start to expand and you try, you like test yourself to be like, these things, I know that they can be related. I'm going to figure it out. I've come up with some ridiculous things doing this, but I feel like it's helped me try to like raise the ceiling of my problem solving or just see the connections and things. I don't know, but I try to be careful to box it 25% because if I'm not careful, I will lose track of time and be distracted.
I love it. And I feel like kind of through the whole conversation that we've been having, the things that keep coming up for me from you are like, honestly, being like intentional and curious. Yes. Like, how do you blend those two together and consciously sitting up with you and it's like, what I'm good at it, or like how these two things connect and how I can tell people that they connect. Yes. But it's about all being intentional, because I feel like sometimes we go to work and we finish the day and I did all these, do you think, little tasks or big tasks. And then you go to the next thing. It's like you didn't even like acknowledge what you did. And then when you go to interviews and when you start networking and when you start talking, it's like, oh, I think I did something. I just don't remember what. Yes. So I think when you start being intentional and being curious about your life and your thoughts about what you do in general, even if it's so simple, it can really help you to start making all those connections.
Yeah. I sometimes what I say to myself is I'm like, I don't want to let life happen to me. You know, like I want to make my life, because I feel like I'm a very intuitive person. I would just fall into things and I'm like, what is product management? I don't know, but I think I should do it. And I'm like, just lacked intention. There wasn't intuition behind it, but I don't know. I've just felt like I don't want stuff to just, I want to, I feel like it's more fulfilling when you are the one that makes it happen, you know, where you're like setting out, you do it, you accomplish it. And you're like, wow, it gives you a sense of confidence. You're like, hey, I can do things, you know, don't let life happen to you. So I try to tell myself regularly.
Thank you so much. This was amazing. Thank you for taking the time, for being patient and waiting to November to talk and meet. I love the conversation. I think it went beyond of like how to break into tech. And I feel like this that we talked today could be including anyone's life, anyone's career. So that was really powerful. Thank you so much.
Great questions. Great facilitation. Great examples. It was incredible overall. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And for people who is listening and watching us, you love Kevin's stories and you have loved people that I have brought in the past, do not forget to subscribe and follow so you don't miss a story like this. And we will see you next week. Everybody, thank you so much. Have a great weekend maybe. Bye. Thank you.